promise of a lord. Welcome to Stop the Presses. It's your host, Mark Anderson. It's 1 p.m. Central Time, and it's the 27th of March, 2024. And I have a guest today, Conrad LeBeau, a monetary researcher and author out of Wisconsin. He advertises in American Free Press. He has a lot of knowledge and ideas about dealing with the Federal Reserve, our friends at that central bank. And we're going to talk momentarily with Conrad about that. I've just got a quick announcement because this is such a all-hands-on-deck issue. The World Health Organization is hell-bent on creating that pandemic treaty when the World Health Assembly meets in Geneva May 27th through June 1st. And I keep getting press releases. I'm on their official list. And the latest one is the WHO is launching COVINET. That's COVINET, COVINET, a global network for coronaviruses. And it has to do with facilitating and coordinating, quote, global expertise and capacities, end quote, for early and accurate detection, monitoring, and assessment of SARS-CoV-2, the alleged COVID-19 virus there, as well as MERS-CoV and novel coronaviruses of other kinds that they would deem to be of public health importance. This follows a March 21 press conference they gave, and it also follows the WHO Director General Tedros having addressed the Interparliamentary Union, a rather obscure group founded way back in 1889, the Interparliamentary Union, where parliaments and congresses of different countries break bread together, and another one of these legally questionable combinations that they always want to form. At any rate, it's a full court press from the WHO because I'm getting all their news as they put it out. I'm not having to hunt for it hardly. And so it is all hands on deck. There's another organization that's calling a lot of attention to this called the Sovereignty Coalition. And without endorsing their organization from top to bottom, they are doing pretty good work on analyzing the sovereignty compromising elements of the pandemic treaty and the international health regulations that are on a parallel track. Of course, I can't stress too much how important this is, ladies and gentlemen listening live and on the archive, because if they consummate this treaty, sooner or later, directly or indirectly, it's going to whittle away and very aggressively perhaps erode the personal medical choice and the individual national prerogative to make a nation's own medical policies. In other words, national and personal autonomy and medical choice and national policies could be severely compromised. And that would mean that if there's another pandemic even approaching like what happened in 2020, 2021, there would be much more in the way of a mechanism to clamp down on people. And even those local tyrants, several governors and other officials in this country, for example, would be able to lean on that WHO treaty and say, see, we have more authority. Now we have this treaty. Even if the treaty is soft law, and even if it's not as aggressive as we might think it is, then the local and state level tyrants will use it to justify further what they did before. So it'd be good to approach your county boards about this. You can email me through the station. You can contact the station and get my email. My email is posted on my personal description for my show at republicbroadcasting.org. It's truthhound2@yahoo.com. At any rate, it's important to get involved in any way you can, everything from letters to the editor to local newspapers to approaching your county boards, city councils, village councils, townships, etc., because many of them don't even know this is going on. And the reason I know that is because I get all this latest news from the WHO, and what I see does not show up very much in the mainstream papers. It's being not altogether censored, but it's being suppressed somewhat. Enough said for now. I'll probably mention a couple other things at the end of the show, but my guest today is Conrad LeBeau, and Conrad is working on a project contacting the Federal Reserve and trying to get them to come clean and answer some important questions. As I mentioned, he's an author. He's got some ideas and prescriptions for monetary reform, monetary policy. And so welcome to the show, Conrad.
Well, thank you, Mark. Thank you very much.
Yeah. What's the latest?
Go ahead.
I know you've got something that you're working on, and you've either already contacted the Fed or you're about to. It's some very important questions. You can tell us a little bit about yourself first. You don't need to go into a lot of detail if you'd like, but mainly let's get right to the point about what we're working on and what you're asking of the Fed.
All right, let's tell you a little bit about myself. I'm 80 years old. I was born in 1943, and I first learned about a dishonest, corrupt banking system from my father from a small dairy farm in Upper Michigan in the mid-1950s. And my father lived through the Great Depression, and he explained to me what caused the Depression of 1929. He told me that was when the Federal Reserve raised interest rates and Herbert Hoover tried paying off the national debt. And he explained the monetary system of the country as a fundamental defect in its design, and that the entrance of new money into circulation enters in the form of a loan. And when that loan is repaid, the money supply collapses, because it's all basically all created by the banks. So this is that's the situation. Then when he had interest rates on to that, all these loans, public debt and private debt, you create a debt that is unrepayable. So today we have this massive mountain of public and private debt that is continuing to grow bigger and bigger and is unrepayable. And he compared it to a balloon full of air. That's when there's enough money supply, it floats, the economy works, and when it runs out of cash from different sources, it collapses like a balloon would collapse. That was the simple explanation he gave me originally. In the 1980s, I was involved with the Wisconsin Society for Educated Citizens, and I got involved with Attorney Lowell Beecraft. He was a patriot lawyer. He still lives in Alabama, I believe. And he sent me the Jerome Daly case from Minnesota, where a jury voided a bank loan because the bank admitted they had created the money to loan on this home. And I sent a lot of these out to farmers, along with just kind of a model lawsuit in the 1980s for 4 years. So hundreds of banks actually were sued with that material I put out. And I finally, and the courts didn't really want to hear about it. It was too much for them to handle because they're dealing with a basic monetary policy issue. And eventually I gave up after about 1985. It wasn't, you know, what I was doing then legally in the courts was not working. I said, either God's going to have to solve this, or Congress will, or the people will have to be educated and figure out a way to solve this problem of this continuously growing public and private debt. And I did nothing. I got my health deteriorated for 2 years. I was very ill. I recovered, and I began doing research on health books, written several of them. And to make a long story short, I originally subscribed to the Spotlight when Willis Cardle ran it. I met the populist candidate, Bob Richards, who was the Olympic winner. He ran for the Populist Party, I believe, in 1984. I met him and helped him out for a while. And I got out of this whole thing until finally around, I think it's 2018, I decided that I needed to go back and write a book on the money issues. I wrote a small booklet. It's on Amazon.com. It's called Money Creation, From the Knights Templars to Wall Street Bankers. So to move forward, this year, for the first time, I've said, I obtained a copy of the original Federal Reserve Act of 1913 from a link I found on WikiLinks on the Federal Reserve. It was one of the links of the subtitle referenced. It was a copy put out by the Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis, Missouri. All single type, all single spaced, with a typewriter, and it's about 32 pages long, but only about 28 pages of actual text, and the rest is an index at the end. When I read through it, it really raised a lot of questions, and I read it once. I'm going to have to read it a couple more times. But it did open up the doors where some of the existing policy of the Federal Reserve came from. And one of them I would like to talk about a little bit is that I'm surprised that the government, which prints Federal Reserve notes, has been selling the currency to the Federal Reserve banks, the privately owned corporations, for the cost of printing for the last 110 years. So this is a government giveaway to a private corporation. I estimate that they probably have obtained about $10 trillion worth of free money that should have gone to the taxpayers first and to the American people, but it went to the banks. So the government sold their currency to the banks, and then they borrow money back from them with interest. And and there's a little bit more to this story, and I haven't submitted. I do have some documentation. In fact, I go back to 1981. I got an answer from the Federal Reserve special agent named Don Nguyen. I have it in writing. I have the exhibit. I think it's posted on my website. If not, I'm going to put it there along with the petition I have to Congress. But basically, he said that at that time, the Federal Reserve banks bought currency from the Bureau of Mint and Engraving for $20.60 per 1,000 notes, regardless of denomination. So it's whether they're buying $100, they could buy 1,000 $1 bills for $20.60, about 2 cents a note. Or they could buy 1,000 $100 bills for $20.60, the legal tender value of which would be $100,000. In other words, you're buying the face value of $100,000 worth of currency and 1,000 Federal Reserve notes at $100 each for $20.60. Now, that price has increased since then. I know it was up to 6 cents a note in 1996 based on a report of the House Banking Committee. More recently, I don't have the direct information from the Fed, but I believe it's up to 17 cents a note now, and some of the $100 bills are higher priced. I think they're up to 71 or 74 cents a note. But that's not even a dollar a note for a $100 bill, which is pretty amazing. The $1 and the $5 bills were cheaper. So they got different prices now because they're using higher technology on the currency. But the problem is that the big deception of the banking system is that they don't lend money. They don't lend lawful money. They don't even lend legal tender notes printed by the government. They lend their own credit instruments, which are checks, lines of credit, debit cards, credit cards, and they keep the cash in the bank. So, and the public has been conditioned to using substitutes for cash. So most today, you see, most transactions are done with debit cards or credit cards. So the banks just keep producing more of these substitutes for money called credit instruments, which is would be checks, but mainly now credit cards and debit cards, or so-called electronic funds, which are just numbers stored on a computer. So the secret of banking and money expansion is that it ain't lawful money. It's just, it's fiction. And it's the fictional part of it is where they make their fictional money, and they spend it legally because people, the IRS accepts credit cards for payment of debts, and almost everybody accepts it, and that's another whole story. But anyway, there's a lot. That is a huge scandal, but I'll stop a second because you're saying something. Go ahead.
Yeah, let me ask a quick question there, and we can segue into your current activities, but this background on you and the Fed is very helpful. If I'm hearing you right, as you understand it, the Fed pays the Bureau of Engraving and Printing certain amounts depending on the denomination. Now it depends on the denomination because the technology and the exact design of a $100 bill may be different than a $20 bill. It used to be a uniform amount regardless of the denomination, but they're paying only pennies on the dollar regardless of the denomination. And if I'm hearing you right, they then have the Bureau print all that for that cheap price, but that money does not go into circulation. Instead, it's, and you can tell me exactly where it goes.
I'll tell you what happens. Yeah, I'll tell you exactly what happens. I first found out reading a book written by Charles E. Coughlin called Money Questions and Answers, which I have a copy of. It was printed in the 1930s during the Depression. And he said the banks, at that time, they didn't have the computers out there, but banks had these bonds, treasury notes, or they call them bonds or securities. You keep coming up with more names. And they'd keep them in a metal cylinder at the treasury there in Washington, D.C. So they had one cylinder for every bank. And they would let them borrow the currency, okay, interest-free, as much as they want, while collecting interest on the entire bond. So we're getting into the second subject. I would call it double-dipping. Remember, they could cash out part or the whole bond, and then they would get interest-free, that money, while collecting interest on the entire debt that the U.S. taxpayers would pay to the banks. That's not the kind of information they want to get out, because they'll say, well, something doesn't smell right here. Because it would be like you going into a bank with a check for $10,000 and say, put it in my savings account, and I'd like to withdraw $5,000. I'd like to take a loan of $5,000 in cash on it, and of course, I don't pay any interest on it. No bank would ever do that to the general public, but that's what the government is allowing the Federal Reserve members to do. And the Federal Reserve, it's a two-step thing. Federal Reserve buys it from the Bureau of Mint and Engraving, then they own it, and then they basically, this is one reason why the banks don't want to balance the federal budget. And they don't want the national debt to go down. They want it to keep growing infinitely. So it becomes like a cancer. It's metastasized, and it just keeps growing. And the debt keeps growing. And the higher the interest rates are, the faster the debt grows, which then programs inflation into the economy because it adds to the cost of all transactions based on credit. So what you got here is a method. Is not only a credit monopoly, but a method of wealth accumulation that never previously invented in the history of the human race. If it goes on long enough, you're going to have an economic system where the banks own everything and everyone else will be basically broke. They'll be just working to pay off all their debts. That's what it comes down to.
Let me interject. You've made a couple other points. As we're sailing here toward your specific actions and what you're asking of the Fed, and people are going to take a lot of interest in that. There's a couple of things you were talking about when you were growing up, and you that was your dad you talked about, right? Your father,
right, Herbert. Yeah,
and because there's some mythologies out there. In my opinion, we always hear, well, there's a bubble. The bubble's going to burst, but an economy has to have enough money in it, just like a balloon has to have enough air in it,
right,
for it to function. There's a lot of libertarians out there that say any kind of money creation of even the slightest significance is going to send inflation through the roof. And I don't buy that, because you've got to have enough a coal in the coal furnace or wood in the wood furnace to create enough heat for the locomotive to go down the track. So this idea that any amount of coal or wood in the furnace is going to make it overheat and explode is ridiculous. And also, you talked about how these interest rates are a cost push type of inflation. In other words, they impose a cost, and that cost ripples through the economy and ends up raising prices as the cost is passed on to the end consumer.
Absolutely.
And in my opinion, that's what drives high prices, much more than this libertarian idea that, oh, you're printing money and therefore each dollar is worth less, which is demand pull inflation. I think, in my opinion, correct me if I'm wrong, that that is a more minor factor in this. And so I'm just ironing out some wrinkles.
Well, there's a lot of different factors that can cause inflation. You can have it's happened in some small countries where governments are just printing all the money. They don't have a banking system, and for whatever reason, and they overdo it. And that's one cause. The other cause is that the international bankers boycott those countries because they don't control the banking system. The banking system, most of the countries in the world now are controlled by the international bankers, and the ones that don't let them control it, they attack them and try to start wars with them to overthrow the governments. And they keep that massage going. They demonize them, and they poison public opinion with their monopoly, which they have in the media. The whole subject of inflation, if you buy a house and you're only paying, say, 2% interest rates on the mortgage, and then it goes to 6%, you've either doubled or tripled the cost of that house over 30 years with the interest rates. So you've programmed inflation into the future with interest rates. Thing about interest rates, you have to realize that they're all artificial, like taxes. Whether taxes are high or low, they're something created by man. They're artificial. Whether interest rates are high and low, they're artificial. There's no such thing as artificially low interest rates. That would be like saying, well, then what are natural interest rates? You know, first of all, interest rates don't exist in nature. Debts don't exist in nature, because money doesn't exist in nature. I mean, you never see two squirrels get together with a credit card and one wants to buy some nuts from the other one. You know, and that doesn't happen in nature. They don't have land titles. There's no corporations. You know, they don't have wars except maybe a few wars between each other fighting over food or territory. But nature is a much more peaceful example of how to live than what goes on in the world right now. And we have, right now, the world is under a cloud of the artificial creation of debts controlled by the bankers, who are an unelected fourth branch of government. And the inflation can be caused by a supply shortage. But right now, I see that the stores are stocked, the car lots are full of cars. So there isn't a shortage. There is a shortage of cash in this country. There's a shortage of an affordable medium of exchange. Affordable medium of exchange would be if the government printed money and then spent it into circulation, debt-free, interest-free, and that money circulates because it doesn't go out of existence the first time you spend it. Somebody else gets it, they use it, and they pass it on to someone else. The last time that the government printed money to pay for a government expenditure was during the Civil War, where Abraham Lincoln was president. When he ran out of gold and silver coins to pay the Union soldiers, they came up with the idea of just printing government notes. They call them United States notes. And they entered circulation, debt-free, interest-free, I believe. There was a set amount set by Congress. I think it's $531 million. Now, all that circulated, but because the Federal Reserve considered United States notes to be competition to Federal Reserve notes, I found a sentence in this 32-page document called the Federal Reserve Act of 1913. I found something in there prohibiting member banks of the Federal Reserve System from using United States notes as part of their required reserve requirements of cash to keep on hand. And yeah, that discrimination against these notes was just to eliminate the value of the competition in a way, because they couldn't. The Federal Reserve doesn't have the power to take it. But I will investigate further to find out why these notes were destroyed within the banking system sometime in the late 1980s. But I haven't done my research in that area.
Yes, yes.
There's a lot of topics to cover here.
Yeah, Lincoln's greenbacks you're referring to.
Right.
That's very important. And maybe we'll get into the minutia of what happens when a bank makes a loan. I don't know if we need to go quite that deep into the rabbit hole, but we're coming up on the bottom of the hour in about 3 minutes approximately. Then there'll be ads and station ID, and then the rest of the show will be, the rest of the almost half hour will be free and clear. And I want to just mention to you and, of course, listeners live and in the archive that we're going to get into not just retracing the history of the Fed or the fibs and fables of the Fed, but also looking at what we can do to approach this behemoth and go at it, go around it, do what we have to do to try and get what Conrad is referring to, and that's an honest, sovereign, national banking system where money is created interest-free. And then we have the right amount of money chasing the right amount of goods. And you can't have price inflation when you have and correct me if I'm wrong, if you have a relative balance between purchasing power, the quantity of money, and the goods and services in the economy, if you have a relative balance, an equilibrium, inflation is at best a minor concern. Wouldn't that be correct?
Yeah, I absolutely believe. I absolutely agree with you. I think the problem is they've tried to glorify interest rates. There's a small portion of the population that really gets something on interest rates, but most of the money that the banks lend, they don't pay any interest on it at all because they create it in the process of lending. And that part is the hardest part to understand, I don't know if we want to go into all that today, but it's basically they're lending something that they don't have. That's basically what it comes down to. Because if a bank writes a check, it's not written against another bank. It's written against themselves. To get the money out of the bank, you got to go to the bank that wrote that check and ask for the cash. And then it's the nature of money. Because people need a safe place to keep their money so they don't get robbed or lose it. So it goes back to the bank. But they don't take the money you bring to a bank and put it in a separate deposit box and say, well, this is your money. No, they put it in one big pot. So you go deposit $100. Next person who cashes a check might get your $100. And you get a record. So this is all people have in the banks today is basically records. That's all it is. 90% is records. And they call these records money, and that's what they lend us, yeah.
Okay, Conrad, we're going to come up on the break here. Yes,
okay.
What I've heard is banks, when a bank makes a loan, a bank parts with nothing. I'll repeat that. When they make a loan, they don't part with anything. So we'll see you on the other side. We got station ID. We'll be right back.
Okay. Thank you.
Simple smile, such platonic eye. How they drown in incomplete capacity. Strangers thought them old when the fear it calls. How we drown in stylistic audacity. Charge the common ground.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
Standing 6'4", weighing in 245 pounds of crime-fighting, political science-analyzing brawn, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Patrick Slattery.
So, Mike, get off this anti-cicada agenda.
I'm a born-again traditional Christian, and my favorite possessions are right here on my nightstand. That would be the King James Bible and my .357 revolver.
I'd rather be ruled by Chinamen than Jews.
Cool it with the anti-Semitic remarks, right?
Just because you steal an election and terminate the republic doesn't mean you terminate the people in the republic, because we're still here.
I'm not taking the vaccine. F*** you, Bill Gates.
There was a way forward still on January 6th. What needed to be done is to object to every single state.
The COVID-19 virus was the setup. The vaccine could very well be a bioweapon.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show, Tuesday at 9 Central and Wednesday at 1 Central.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects.
Email Tom at republicbroadcasting.org, T-O-M at republicbroadcasting.org.
And welcome back to Stop the Presses, the second half of the show, 27 March 2024. And I'm talking to Conrad LeBeau, a Wisconsin author and researcher on the Federal Reserve System and monetary matters in general. He has been a long time. He described his background in earlier in the show. He kind of got out of it for a while, and now he's back into it. It sounds like both feet, Conrad. And
yeah, definitely with both feet, yeah.
Yeah, now we could get into all this banking minutia a little more, but let's segue toward what you're up to, contacting the Fed, how people can get your books, matters of education, matters of taking action, matters of learning okay, in such a way where we know how to, again, bring this Godzilla under control. It's got to happen sometime.
Right. First, I think if people have a pen and paper handy, they probably want to write down my website or contact information. So I would recommend you might go to the website I got called LeBeauBooks.com. That's spelled L-E-B-E-A-U, books, B-O-O-K-S.com, LeBeauBooks.com. And you will see on there all the books that I publish, and I have this one booklet on money creation. 64 pages. It's only a $7 book, and you get all the information on all my research up to 3 years ago that went in there, and including newer research and proposals on how to create an honest money system to replace the existing one. I don't believe you can just flip a switch and you're going to go from a dishonest system to an honest one, because if you just ended the Fed or abolished the Fed, you'd basically terminate the whole financial system of the United States. You'd have massive unemployment. People wouldn't be able to cash their checks. Everything is controlled by the banks there. They got their own clearinghouses, the checks clearinghouses. They got their secretive rules that they circulate among the banks. They do put certain limits, because every bank, to some extent, creates money. They all do it. They're all in the business. But I do want to tell you that I have proposed a number of reforms, and I did publish these in the American Free Press for 4 months last year, twice a month. It was a petition to in Congress to enact the Federal Reserve Overdraft Protection Act and acts to print greenback dollars like Abraham Lincoln did, United States notes, and also to mint gold and silver coins, but not at the values that they were 50 or 60 years ago. You can't have a legal tender value in a gold coin that you pay $2,000 for, and the value is only $100 on the coin for paying debts. That's about the most ridiculous thing anybody ever heard of. That would be like putting the value of a Federal Reserve note based on its intrinsic value. A $100 note or a $1 note be worth about 2 cents. At least it would in 1981, maybe be worth 17 cents now, but you can't do that. But anyway, there's five different parts to it. I did a lot of work on it, and copies of it are available. I had a link. I may restore it. You can freely download the petition, but people do need the book to understand. There are multiple, the whole history of how we got into this mess. And if you have a book any bigger than 64 pages, nobody's going to read it. People don't like to read today, so they like to look at the cover and then move on. Of course, you can't take an issue as complex as this and solve it that quick. But fractional reserve banking is discussed, but that is, it's just a fraudulent method of accumulating wealth. It's a Ponzi scheme. It's a money monopoly, is what the whole Federal Reserve System is. So I came up with some solutions. I'm just going to describe them briefly. They're available. Get a copy of my book on money creation. It's not going to break the bank. It's only $7. You get the petition to Congress, and you get a copy of a research which I put together originally over 40 years ago, called Famous Quotations on Banks and Money. It goes all the way back to Thomas Jefferson, who opposed Hamilton's first United States bank. In fact, Jefferson wrote to George Logan in 1814. He said he considered banking institutions a greater threat to our liberties than standing armies. Once you put the power of money creation in someone's hands, eventually they're going to end up owning everything, the politicians and everything. So go to LeBeauBooks.com and read about the book, and you'll get the petition, the Famous Quotations on Money brochure, the book, and then you can be educated and so you know how to proceed. And then get on my mailing list by going there, and even with an email, even if you don't buy nothing, contact me even by phone. I'll put you on a list when I do have something important to say. I got over 1,000 names and growing. If we ever do get a piece of legislation, I'll be contacting everybody to contact the members of Congress, and I'm going to be working on podcasts in the future, where I'm going to have photographic evidence that I'll be showing in video. I just announced that's a project that's ahead of in the next few months. Freedom of Information Act request to the Federal Reserve Board. There are five sets of documents I asked for. You want me to go over that right now?
Yeah, I was going to ask you, in the information you were putting out about LeBeauBooks.com, and people can get your book and get other materials. Does that include what you're about to read right now?
Yes, I'm going to have that available for downloading free. Yeah, it's going to be the Freedom of Information Act request to the Federal Reserve Board. I'll have a link for that on my homepage at levelbooks.com.
Yes, yes, so go ahead.
I'll be putting it on there. It's not down there in the meeting, but it'll be there in the next few days.
Okay, yeah, because this is what, although everything is important here, and these are important things to review and ponder and contemplate, but this is what sort of where we're going with today's show. So let's go ahead and have you cover right now that freedom of information thing for the Fed. I'm very curious about that. Go right ahead on that.
All right. Well, I dated this past Saturday, March 25th, 2024. So the Office of the Secretary of the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve System, 2001 C Street, Northwest Washington, D.C., 20551. And it starts off this way. Gentlemen, the scope of information sought in this Freedom of Information request is broad. The documents sought are intended for both research and educational purposes to share it with the public. I'm approving a sum of up to $100 I'll pay by check or money order for the cost of paying for printing of these documents. If the cost is higher, then send me a written estimate before sending them. If the information requested does not exist or cannot be located, please indicate that in your reply. Then I go with number one. Copies of any and all laws, U.S. code banking regulations, rules promulgated by the Federal Reserve Board or under the Administrative Procedures Act that would prevent Congress of the United States from printing Federal Reserve notes or United States notes and directly depositing said notes into the U.S. Treasury's bank account at the Federal Reserve Bank for the purpose of paying government expenditures. Next set of documents I requested. Pursuant to question number one, if Congress authorizes the printing of United States notes or Federal Reserve notes to pay interest on the national debt or for other purposes as authorized by Congress, copies of any laws, regulations, or other legal impediments that would prevent Congress from depositing these notes into either banks or credit unions that are not members of the Federal Reserve System. And the reason I have in question number two is I read on the Federal Reserve Board's website that they have a rule or law or to prevent Congress from printing money and then depositing it in his bank account to cover government expenses. That's on the Federal Reserve's website. So I want to know what those laws are, and I want to know if there are any laws that would prevent them, because in my frankly opinion, they're all unconstitutional and illegal, because the Constitution did not give private corporations a license to have a monopoly on creating money. That authority was granted to Congress.
And the U.S. Constitution. Let me add something real quick there, and then I'll let
go
you
ahead.
On. Nor was the Constitution amended when the Fed was created to even authorize the Fed. The income tax, even though it might be flawed, at least there's a 16th Amendment. The Fed is nowhere even expressed in the Constitution. So the whole thing smacks of unconstitutionality.
Well, Thomas Jefferson said that the bank, with its power to create money, was unconstitutional. He was against that all along. Okay, now the third set of questions. Copies of any court decisions or the citations to such decisions where a federal court has voided part of the Federal Reserve Act of 1913 as amended to date, and including court decisions that have altered or voided rules under the Administrative Procedures Act or regulations approved by the Federal Reserve Board since 1913. So basically what I'm looking for there is I want to see if how many of the Federal Reserve actions in the last 100 years have been challenged in court and what the results were, because that'll tell me, give me an idea where I'm going if I decide to file a lawsuit against the Federal Reserve. And then number four, copies of all legal documents, pro and con, including mail, emails, sent and received by members of the Federal Reserve Board from both foreign and domestic bankers and other sources, such as the World Economic Forum, the International Monetary Fund, on whether or not the Federal Reserve Board has legal authority to design a central bank digital currency. Now, I don't know where they're going with this, because they've been using digital money, but there is no such thing as a digital currency. If it's digital, it's in the computer. If it's currency, it's in your wallet. It's cash. And the last one, copies of existing laws that provide legal definitions for the following words. A, what is a dollar? B, what is currency? Now, I'm asking these questions, what is a dollar, for a reason, because I went to Wikipedia several months ago, and I wanted to research on the subject. They have a lot of great research, and the deep state is angry at Wikipedia because they're telling a lot of truth out there, so they're bad-mouthing them. But under the subject of dollar, Wikipedia did their research. They couldn't find a legal definition for what a dollar is. Well, in the most common sense, knowledge of money, we know a dollar is 100 pennies, 20 nickels, 10 dimes, 4 quarters, or a $1 bill. We assume that that's what dollars are. But there's no legal definition that a number stored in a computer is a dollar, or the record of money is money, is a dollar. So you have that. And I have plenty of evidence to prove that this is what the bulk of our money system is, our records stored in the bank's computers, and I believe that is basically all illegal. So these are the 5 questions. I'm sure the lawyers will be so happy to see that and respond or find excuses for not answering or not providing me, but it won't surprise me they find no legal definition, because I haven't been able to find it, for what a dollar is. A dollar originally in 1792 started off as being a silver dollar, a 1 troy ounce silver dollar based on the Spanish silver dollar, which was the model that they used in 1792. So these are the first set of questions, and I'm going to have more to follow, but I'm not going to overload them with more. Each one is going to be about 5 questions, and I probably have about 2 more sets to send them, and each one deals. Yeah, then what do we got here?
Very interesting, Conrad. I do very much like the fact, and I was waiting for it, I was anticipating it, that you include the central bank digital currencies. A Cornell professor wrote a book that pertains to that subject, and they brought it out about a year and a half ago, approximately, through the Brookings Institution, no surprise there, and began to raise the specter of, well, we're going to have this central bank digital currency. And it never quite occurred to me to question the word currency with the word digital. But you're right. That suggests something is askew there. Something is off base. If it's a central bank digital, then how can it be a currency other than to use the word currency to sell the idea?
Oh, yeah, you have to have, words have to have definite meanings. Otherwise, you can just call anything money. You could call a mental telepathy money. I mean, you could call the leaves on a tree money, apples, oranges, lawn clippings. You know, you could turn anything into money if that you want to do that. That would have more substance than the digits in a computer. But that digital dollars is an oxymoron. That'd be like a digital hamburger. Can you imagine biting into that? You'd have a sesame seed bun with lettuce and tomato and onions and ketchup and mustard, and for your hamburger, you have a piece of paper that shows a picture of the meat. That would be in the middle of a bun. Can you imagine biting into that? You know, you'd bite into that, and you'd sound like that lady on the old Wendy's commercial. Where's the beef?
I've had some brushes with the Fed, minor ones over the years, mainly in my work for American Free Press. I recall in 2006, I was covering some matters in Kansas City, Missouri, and I read in the local Fed literature on the Kansas City Fed, that branch of the Fed, one of 12 branches, of course, that they had a like a little museum there. And I had some questions for their media liaison. And when I called on the phone, that person wasn't there, if I recall correctly, and they never called me back. And no matter how many times I called, I couldn't even get a call back, let alone a time to come in, because I believe the museum wasn't altogether ready for the public view, but I was trying to get them to give me a sneak peek at it as a reporter, and I could get no cooperation from them whatsoever. Pretty soon I could tell I was getting the stiff arm, even contacting them. And if they think that you're even the least bit highly inquisitive about their machinations, they're not real polite. And they also have their own police. I had a little experience in Chicago where there was activists protesting the Fed, and a father make-believe handcuffed his son to the Chicago Federal Reserve Bank, the big heavy brackets, the iron brackets covering a ground floor window, and he handcuffed his son to it symbolize that his son was forever in debt to that bank or through that bank. And the Federal Reserve sent their police out. Now, they were nice to the little kid, but they have their own police force, and they're a kind of a economic and political entity unto themselves. And
they are. It's all self-funding. Yeah, I didn't get into the part. Yeah.
Yeah, but anyway, has this query, this Freedom of Information Act inquiry, has that been sent yet?
Or are you? It's been mailed out. It probably arrived today. First-class mail, return receipt requested by certified mail. Yeah.
Interesting.
It's going to go to their, wherever they process these. And I'm sure I'll get some kind of a response. We'll see what it is. They got 20 days to respond, and I plan to have another one there within another week or two. I have some other projects to do, but I'm going to be working on another set of issues on top of the five I sent, dealing with other subjects. Number one, the Federal Reserve, I want them to confirm that this publication put out by the Federal Reserve Bank of Boston in 1980 is correct, because they put out information that's generally not available to the public. Federal Reserve, they, in that publication, and I have a copy of that, I'll be putting that on my website for free download. They say when the Federal Reserve writes a check, it is creating money. Well, technically everybody is, except there's one difference. The Federal Reserve banks do not have an account. They state that in there at any other bank in the country. In other words, they can write a check against no funds. So how are they creating money? They're just making a debit entry on a computer for a bank account. It said when the Federal Reserve check is deposited, it adds money to one commercial bank account, but doesn't take any money away from another one. This is with no balance in your account. They just create money out of thin air. Congress hasn't even reserved the power to do that for themselves. In other words, the Secretary of Treasury could write a check to the Treasury Secretary and pay off the whole national debt if they gave them the same power that they've given to the Federal Reserve banks. So this is why the Federal Reserve can write checks and create these digital dollars, but the Federal Reserve banks print no United States notes or Federal Reserve notes, and especially Federal Reserve notes. They don't print anything, no currency. They buy it for the cost of printing. So one of the greatest deceptions, and it's been going on for years, you'll see every day on TV, the printing press is printing these Benjamins, $100 bills. So you think, well, the government's printing all this money. How are they running out of money? Well, they don't tell you. They never tell you. They're selling it to this privately owned corporation, all owned by bankers, called the Federal Reserve System, for the cost of printing. That they don't tell you. But you should know right there that there's something wrong fundamentally with this whole system, you know. That's information that needs to get out.
Let me reiterate right there to make sure I understand. If I'm hearing you right, once they have the Bureau of Engraving and Printing for such a cheap price, print that money, and then right. the Fed owns it. It sounds to me like they're keeping a lot of that out of circulation in order to keep us addicted to credit cards and other interest-bearing instruments.
Well, that may be true, but it's more sinister than that. They're using that currency as the basis to create more bank credit and expand the amount of checks and lines of credit, other things they use. Because the only limiting factor for a bank to make loans is whether the people are going to go and withdraw cash to cash those credit instruments, which would be a check, let's say, into cash and lose it. You know, if they run out of cash, then they have no ability to make any more loans. That is the secret of the banking system. And it's the nature of money, because you spend the money, the next person isn't going to keep it out of the bank. They're going to spend it, and somebody is going to bring it back to the bank, so they're going to get it back. It recycles back to whoever you owe money to. And most money eventually ends up in the hands of the lenders.
So the creditors, we're coming up on the end of the show, Conrad. So therefore, the Fed is commandeering and sequestering a lot of that money so it can function, while at the same time withholding it from the people so they become more dysfunctional.
They don't want the people to be too prosperous. Okay, they want to keep people down because they figure if they keep people poor, keep you with your nose to the grindstone, working all the time to pay debts, you're not going to ever have time to learn how you're being swindled by the bankers on Wall Street.
We're coming up on the end of the show, Conrad. I got to be strict to the time here, but thanks for being on here. Again, that's LeBeauBooks.com. Let's get this announced. LeBeau Books.com. That's a French name, evidently. LeBeau Books.com.
And
it sounds to me like everything we're talking about, everything you've talked about, is or soon will be available through that website.
There's a lot available there right now. If you check the book on money creation, and I do state you get the... It's not a bank breaker. It's only a $7 investment to get the book, 64-page book, and to get these famous quotations on money and the petition to Congress. You agree with the petition, and you understand it. You'll sign it, send it, and about half the members of Congress have already received that petition. And I believe one set of books... I don't know if we're running out of time, but I have reason to believe Donald Trump actually got a copy of that book, although I never sent it to him in the petition, because he'd made comments that only someone would make who read through that book on money creation.
We got to go, Conrad. Thanks for being on the show. Everyone, stay tuned for the next show here on republicbroadcasting.org, and go to James Roguski's site, jamesroguski.substack.com, for more on the Who, R-O-G-U-S-K-I. We'll see you next time. I'm Mark Anderson.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
What would you say if I told you we have a new tool that will increase production and lower maintenance costs for your meat processing company, and it would pay for itself in just 6 weeks?
When pigs fly!
The new EaseOff Model EZ4 replaces old spring-style carcass droppers and is faster, safer, and more reliable. The EaseOff lowers or lifts 1,000 pounds to or from your rail automatically using our remote control.
Sounds expensive! Can I afford it?
Can you afford not to try the EaseOff? It installs fast with just 3 bolts in place of your current dropper. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue and injuries, speed up your line, eliminate downtime, and increase profit.
How can I order my EaseOff?
Go to EaseOff.com, EazeOff.com, and hurry, because we are offering $200 off on the new EZ4 for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too. EaseOff LLC, Summersville, Missouri, 417-932-6419.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.